left off last week, we began to discuss the din of Tumas Meis. Because Tumas Meis interests us, Lemaisa, this man is only concerning a Kohanim. There are other issues, of course, that at one time were relevant to Tumas Meis, even for Israel. If a person becomes Tumas Tumas Meis, they would be required to be Matar themselves appropriately with Eifer Paraduma in order to come to the Beis HaMikdash, to bring Kavanos, each room, and Maisasheni, etc. Or Tumas Meis is relevant to Duchas Naziras, but for us, Lemaisa, it only plays much of a role in terms of the Isser of Tumas Kohanim. So what exactly does it mean that a Kohen is not permitted to come into contact with Tumas Meis? So last week we spoke a little bit about the different gradations of Tumah. Not all Tumas Meis are necessarily a problem for a Kohen. We spoke about the differences between Tumas Shanaz Megalech Aleim, Tumas Shanaz Megalech Aleim. But now we're going to move into a little bit more general statements. Namely, once we've identified a Dover Tumah that could potentially be Matami a Kohen, that could potentially cause a problem, just how close does the Kohen have to be? Just what's considered to be contact with a maze? So assuming that we have a real body, not a piece of jewelry that touched the body at one time. We have the real McCoy, a real maze, whatever that means. So in what methods, what manners does the tumor spread? So the halacha tells us that there are fundamentally three different ways that a maze is Matami. One is through maga, through touching. One is through masa, through moving, carrying. And one is through ol, being in the same roof. Touch it up a little bit, what exactly that means. What is the source for these halachas? Two of them are explicit in Chumash. Maga says it in Parshas Chukas, that if a person touches a mace, or whatever is considered to be halachically a mace, becomes tame, and therefore, when the Torah says that a kohen cannot become tame mace, obviously maga is included. Ol is also explicitly in the Chumash, it's also Torah Adam Kiyamus, etc. Also Psukim in Parshas Chukas. But Masap is not to be a Pasuk in Chumash. It doesn't say anywhere in Parshas Chukas, or anywhere for that matter, that a mace is Matari B'masa. So what would the din be if I'm out in the open field somewhere, and I'm not touching the mace, and I'm not under the same? Ol is a mace, just the fact that I'm moving, that I'm dragging, that I'm carrying the mace, even though I'm not actually touching the mace. How do you know that would be a problem? How do you know such a person becomes tummy? So it's clearly a din, and it's clearly a din in the Torah. There's no question about it. There are Mishnais and Sukkis and the Gemara about it. A mace is clearly Mitaib Masa, but it's not clear exactly where it comes from. So the Rambam at the beginning of Hilchos Tumas Meis writes that it's understood, it's built into the parasha of Tumas Oel. Says the Rambam, it's almost like a Kal V'Chomer. There are many Mesim, there are many Tumas that are spread through Masa. And many times the Torah says explicitly, in Pasha Shemini, and other places, Hanosei Osab Yitmad Arev, if a person carries a piece of nevel of dead animal that wasn't shechted properly, he becomes Tameh, even though he didn't touch it. The Torah speaks about if a person carries something that a Zav sat on, Hanosei Osab Yechab Yitmad Tameh Arev. So the Torah speaks in many places about coming into contact with a Dover Tameh through merely carrying it without touching it. But the only place that the Torah speaks about the tremendous Chumrah of Tumas Oel, that tumor could spread from 100 miles away as long as you're under the same covering, that's mentioned only by mace. So the Rambam writes, it's not a kal v'chomer. A madach, a mace, is metame in this wild case of oil, which is really, really a tremendous chiddush. I'm not touching the mace, not carrying the mace, I'm nowhere near the mace, but I'm the same structure as the mace, I become tame. So kal v'chomer, says the Rambam, for sure, masa, which is an acceptable form of spreading tumor, proof positive it exists by Zav, and it exists by Nidin, and it exists by Nevela. So Masa, which 95% of the time is considered to be like touching, so Kal V'Chomer, that should apply to Meis. Says the Rambam, the only reason why the Torah didn't write it, because it's so obvious. The Torah says, Madach, if you're in the same oil, and you're 100 feet away, you become Tamei Kal V'Chomer. If you're out in the open field, then you drag the Meis. The Rambam writes, this is for sure Kal V'Chomer. And one shouldn't think that this Kal V'Chomer is only the Rabbanan, Ramzan, no, Chalila. This is a real Din Torah, and this is part of the Toshim HaPeh. There's no question under the sun that Masa is considered to be a Tumah. And the Ram takes a little bit of a digression. The very beginning Rambam, Tanuchas Tumas Meis, and the Rambam writes, so why is it that the Torah didn't spell it out? If the Din is true, so there's so many other people in the Torah, the Torah could have said it somewhere. There's a Din of Tumas Masa by Meis. So the Rambam writes, don't be surprised that every once in a while the Torah doesn't write something, Mitach Rop Shituso. Because it's so obvious from the context that anybody can figure it out. You don't even need a great Chachma. You don't have to spend years working on this Kal V'Chomer. Anybody can figure it out. So the Rambam gives you a few different Mishalim of things that are not written absolutely explicitly in the Torah, and yet they're so understood, Mitach Rop Shituso. So the Rambam writes, as there's two examples. One of them is in the realm of Arayos. The Torah says, both in Parshas Achrimos and in Parshas Kedoshim, one is not permitted to be together with one's granddaughter. That's considered to be one of the arayos. Ervos bas bincha, ervos bas bincha, bas bincha, etc. So if you look carefully at the Pesukim in Parshas Achrimos, it never says ervos bincha. It doesn't say a person is also to be mezada with his own daughter. It says ervos bas bincha. So says the Rambam, Chalil, someone's going to say that his daughter is mutter. So we know that then is a person is mezada with his daughter. So it's a karis and it's a misa. So it's a terrible avera. But it doesn't say black and white in the Chumash. The Rambam writes, the shasak akosim et achrok pshituso. Madach it asks as a granddaughter. So of course it asks as a daughter. Yesh b'chom asay amana. That's included. It's even more chomer than being mezada with someone who's a further relative away from one. So the Rambam writes, the Torah doesn't have to say it. It's so obvious, and therefore it's treated as if it's a davar b'fush b'Torah. That's one of the Rambam's mashal. I could hear the mashal. I could definitely hear that. But then the Rambam gives another mashal, which is a little bit more difficult to digest. The Rambam writes that the Torah never says explicitly not to eat basa b'cholav. It says it three times not to cook basa b'cholav. And somehow we have the Torah Shabbat that teaches us that you're not allowed to eat it as well. So the Rambam says, but why doesn't it say it? So the Rambam says, it doesn't say b'tach pshituso. What's the pshituso? So says the Rambam, in Madach, you're not allowed to cook the basa b'cholav. What in the world could be also about cooking basa b'cholav? Why does the Torah say you can't cook basa b'cholav? It must be the Torah doesn't want you to have basa b'cholav around. The Torah doesn't want that you should prepare basa b'cholav because the next thing you know is going to eat it. So says the Rambam, everybody understands that the Isra of Bishul basa b'cholav, like the case of Mishnah writes, is almost like a gezeira d'oraisa. It's like a decree min haTorah to protect you from eating the basa b'cholav. So how can you say something as absurd as to say that, well, bishul is asur, but eating is itself is mutter. If the whole issur of bishul is atu the achila, it's self understood that achila is bas b'chol is asur. So that's the reason why the Torah doesn't say mitach rob shitusel. By saying that bishul is asur, it's self evident that achila is asur as well. Other Shem don't say that. Other Gemaras don't say that. Other Gemaras sound like it's a special drasha, it's a kasim, it's halach moshtina, it's tashim apel, whatever you want to, different makaros. Everybody comes to the same conclusion that basa b'cholav is also in the Torah, but others don't have this kavachamim. One could argue with this kavachamim in the Rambam. One could say that maybe the issur of bishul basa b'cholav has nothing to do with eating. It's an issur of pukla, it's an issur of maisa. Don't cook basa b'cholav. Like Lamashal, you're not allowed to graft a tree. You're not allowed to suckle a scissor kalai. You're not allowed to, you're not allowed to plant different vegetables together. You're not allowed to graft trees. Let's say a person went ahead and did it. So you're allowed to use the result. The only thing you're not allowed to use is if you plant kiliyat karam. If you plant grains together with grapes, then the resulting product is awesome. But if I made a, what's the fruits that people make? Nectarines. If you graft trees, a peach and apricot, you make a nectarine. So what you did was an issur min haTorah, but it's mutlachat chilut to eat the nectarine. So you see that the Torah does create issurei pe'ulos, issur ma'isim, which don't necessarily carry with them an issur on the result. So maybe the Torah asks it to cook bas b'cholav. The Torah doesn't want you to be working in a bas b'cholav restaurant. Doesn't want you to be flipping the burgers. Everybody knows the bas b'cholav or not. Doesn't want you to be cooking bas b'cholav. But maybe the bas b'cholav happened. Maybe you can eat it. So how did the Rambam know that mitach rop shituso? The Torah didn't aser achilas bas b'cholav. That's a questionable Rambam. But the theme behind the Rambam is relevant for us is that even though it's not explicit in the Torah, it's self-evident that there's a din of tumas masa. So the ma'aseh there is such a din. It's a din of tumas maga, a din of tumas masa, a din of tumas ohel. 99% of the time, the Kohanim ask shailas revolving around tumas ohel. Once in a while you have a tumas maga shaila, you very, very, very rarely get a tumas masa shaila. I didn't get one. I didn't get it personally, but I was informed about it. It was once a shaila came up in Eretz Yisrael. There was a Kohen who was in the army, and there was a dead body, whatever it was, and they had to remove a body. So it wasn't really Pekuch Nefesh anymore. Pekuch Nefesh was over. The question was whether he could be involved in this particular show, he could be involved, and they had to drag it somewhere, they had to get it out of the open space. I don't know what the story was exactly. So apparently his vehicle was supposedly in charge of moving this body. He was the driver of the vehicle. So the question is, can you do that? Okay, I'm gonna press the gas. I'm gonna be the one who's gonna move this body. So I'm not touching the body. It's at a totally open space. So it's no tumas oil. It's no tumas maga. But I'm actively causing the body to move. That's considered to be tumas mas. Again, I don't know what the issues were. I don't know what the factors were. But that was the only time I ever heard of a shayla of a masa shayla of bizman hazeh. But whatever it is, so you have tumas maga, tumas mas, and tumas ol. Three different ways. Each of them would be problematic on a level of deraisa. Whether you accept the Rambam, have a different Machor, the Mice, all three are Tamim in HaTorah. And therefore, any of these would be problematic for a kohen. So maga and masa, fairly self-explanatory. We're going to spend the most of the time talking about tumas oel. What exactly constitutes tumas oel and what not? So the basic description of the Torah is also Torah adam ki yamus oel. If you're in the same oel, so it doesn't mean only a tent. Oel here means any structure, any gag that's over both you and the mace, that's considered to be tumas oel. The truth is, the Mishnayos tell us that there are really three different types of tumas oel. There's tumas oel, we call oel b'hamshacha. I'm over here, there's a mace 100 feet away, but we're under the same structure. That's the tumas oel of the Chumash. And then there are two almost subcategories of tumas oel. What if I'm not under the same oel, but I am being ma'hil on the mace? There's a mace on the ground, and I'm leaning over the mace. There's nothing above it. It's an open field. I'm not physically touching it. I'm not moving it, but I'm bending over. I'm leaning over the mace. So that's also considered to be a tumas oel. Or what about the other way around? What if the mace is suspended in the air, and I'm walking under the mace, so the mace is being ma'hil on me? That's also considered to be tumas oel. So tumas oel either goes up, goes down, or goes, hits the top, or goes sideways and spreads all around the room. So any of those are considered to be tumas oel. It's this, one of these forms of tumas oel that now become problematic in terms of a kohen going to a basic varos. So if a kohen goes to a basic varos, if he leans over the kever, so that's going to be a problem because the mace is inside. And we'll talk about this a little bit later, whether the arod separates, whether the grave separates, is there any chatzitza whatsoever. But if there's a mace there, and there are bones there, and things that are metamim be'oel, so then though, even though there's nothing over you, and you're not literally touching it, and you're not moving it, just the fact that you're being ma'il over the mace, so that itself becomes problematic. Going to basic verse can also be problematic, because even if you're not literally, even if you're careful not to walk over a grave mamish, but very often there are oels in the basic verse, there are trees. So let's say if there's a mace over here, and you're over here, and there's a tree that's going over both of you, so that's also considered to be in the same oel. We'll talk about this as we go on. Kohanim have to be very careful, even near basic varuses. There are many, many places. Some of the highlights, those are in Kugan Hills. There's a whole stretch of Main Street that's a potential problem because there are trees that overhang over a side of a basic varus. You have a lot of these kinds of scenarios. So one has to always ask yourself a question. Every Kohen has to ask themselves a question. Am I being mile on the mace? Is the mace being mile on me? Or are we in the same under the same structure? Any of them would be a violation in a Torah potentially of tumas oel. What if a kohen is in one room and there's a mace in a totally different room? Is that considered to be, there's walls in between? Is that considered to be the same oel? So here the Mishnah says we have the following halacha: if there's a break, if there's an opening between the two rooms, so then it's all considered to merge together to be one room. What's considered to be an opening? So the halacha is, if it's what's called a pesach tefach, so there's a size of an opening, there's a crack, there's a hole between the two rooms of more than a tefach by a tefach. Pesach tefach by a tefach, not too big, that's considered to be something that connects the two rooms together. So let's say, for argument's sake, you would have mace in the next room, but we're going to talk a little bit later about the doors, but let's assume for a minute that the doors are davra chotzeitz. And there would be a mace in the next room, so you look around and see there's no opening, there's no little crack here that's less than a tefach by tefach. You don't add up the length of the crack, it has to be a square of a tefach by tefach. You look around, I don't see any tumor that's spreading, so it sounds like the cohen would be in this room, would be all right. You'd have to be very careful and make sure you look all around, because there's another door over there, and lo and behold, that door happens to be open. I can't tell you whether the other door's open, but in theory, if the other door to my house would be open, and you'd have a mace over here, and that door would be open, so then the tumor would just spread around the other direction. So any place that you have an opening of tefach by tefach, the tumor automatically shoots through that space. Where did this shear come from? Vasech tefach, of tefach al tefach. So the Pasha says, the problem is that this is a halacha Moshe Mesinai. The Gemara tells us that all the shiurim are halacha Moshe Mesinai. So Kizayis is halacha Moshe Sinai, and Kibetz is halacha Moshe Sinai. Ken Tfachim, Da'aramas, all these seemingly arbitrary numbers that we have don't really correspond to all that much, that we couldn't figure them out on our own. So the Pasha says, the problem is that the shear of Vasech tefach is also halacha Moshe Mesinai. That's the Pasha Pshat and halacha. There is a shach in the Siman about the Hilchos Tumas Kohanim that sounds like he's saying that it's only midirabanan. Sounds like he's saying that Minat Torah, as long as it's not really the same room, there's really a wall between, so what's a little hole, a little crack in the wall here and there, it sounds like that whole shear of Hosech Tavach is only a Chumah midirabanan. I say it sounds that way because the post can point out that's not correct. The Chassam Sofer and others point out that there was a mistake in where the not mistake in the shach, but a mistake where the printer put the shach. The Shulchan Aruch is talking about a bunch of things in Hilchos Tumas Meis, And on one of those things, the Shach says, this is a din mit derabbanan. So the printer put the Shach on the line, the Shulchan Aruch, about Pasech Tefach. So it's not supposed to be there. It's supposed to be three lines later, where the Shulchan Aruch is talking about something that may be derabbanan. So people misunderstood. They thought the Shach meant that Pasech Tefach is only derabbanan. So the Chassam Sofer and others point out, it's impossible. It can't be. It's Mishnayis, Gemara. It doesn't say anywhere in the Gemara that Pasech Tefach is only a chumim derabbanan. So notwithstanding that apparent Shach, it could be the whole thing was just a toast. Now the Shach was a mistake of where the printer placed that Shach. But whatever it is, whatever the Shach did or didn't say, Lamais, everybody assumes that this is a real Dimin HaTorah. The Mishnayis, Gemara is explicitly that Pasech Tefach spreads Tuma. Is there anything that can spread Tuma even if it's less than Pasech Tefach? So the Mishnah says that the sheer Pasech Tefach, that size of a hole, is only necessary if the goal of that hole is potentially like to put things through it, to hand things through it. So then there's a shiur pasech tefach. What if you have a hole that was made for other purposes? Let's say the hole was made that air should spread. The hole was made that light should spread. So then even if the size of the hole is less than a pasech tefach, it could potentially spread tumah. What's the shiur for those smaller kinds of holes? So the Gemara speaks about the size of a pundion. I can't tell you what a punyon, it's a small coin, I can't tell you exactly how big it is, but it's significantly less than a tefach and a tefach. So if you have certain lights that are made for other, certain holes that are made for other reasons, then it could be, it's even more chum, maybe even less than a shiur of a tefach, may be problematic. So we'll talk about this a little bit later, when we talk about air vents. So vents, which sometimes connect to rooms, it's less than a tefach, and it may still be a problem if it's the size of a punyon, because the goal of those holes are to spread air, that may be a problem. If you have a small window or something, so the goal of that window was to let air in, to let light in, so maybe that locha may be different. So again, you have to try to figure out, whenever you talk about mitzvah for different rooms together, whether we're working with the shear of a pesach tefach, whether we're working with somewhat of a smaller shear. Is there anything that could break up this connection? Let's go back to the pesach tefach for a minute. So they have two rooms and have a little hole in between. Is there anything that can be done to stop the tumor from spreading? So the Gemara says, yeah, the Mishnah says, yeah. That if you plug it up, if you stuff it up with something, so that's considered to be a davar mafsik, a davar chaytzeis b'fnei tumor, and that would be okay. How long do you have to put it there? Can you put it there just temporarily? I'll just, let's say, have a mace in one room, and I want to go into the other room, so we'll just stuff it up with something. So the Gemara has this whole sugi with Megillah, that there was once a mace in the room, it was next door to the shul, and the Gohanim wanted to come in, but there was a window, there was a hole in between the rooms, so they moved the Aron Kodesh, they rolled the Aron Kodesh and blocked the hole, so the Gohanim would be able to come through. So Tosfos has a whole discussion with Masechet Mitzvot Asra about how long that break has to be. I could just stuff something there just for Shacharis and let the Kohanim come and daven and then leave, would have to be something that mevatel there forever. So Tosfos shows you from the Mishnayos and the Gemaras that seem to be two different halachas, that if I close up the entire hole, there's nothing there, so even if I only did it temporarily, that would be good enough. If I don't close up the entire hole, I just minimize the hole less than a tefach, the hole's still there, it's just 0.9 a tefach, I just made it a little bit smaller, so then I have to have a much more significant kind of a bittel. What I'm lacking in terms of the quality of bittel, I have to make up in terms of the length of the bittel, then I have to leave it there forever. I have to leave it there for whatever forever means, a long period of time. These are dinim in a Torah, lacham hashem sinai. It's taught to say svaras in these things. The Tosfos points this out, that if you totally close up the hole, so then you don't have to worry bichlal. If you just partially close up the hole, then it has to be a stronger bittel. What halachas are necessary that govern the closing up of the hole, so to speak? What exactly, what type of material, what type of substance can serve as a davar chaytzeitz? So the Mishnayos and the Gemaras give us a couple of important conditions to be aware of. So one of the important conditions is that it has to be something that itself is Eina Mekabel Tuma. Let's say I have a little bit of a hole, and I'll take a pot, and I'll stick the metal pot there to close up, to stuff up the hole. So the Mishnah says that's no good, because a pot, a metal kli, is Mekabel Tuma. So say I'll take a wooden kli or something, a wooden bowl is Mekabel Tuma. So anything itself that's Mekabel Tuma is Eina Chaytzis B'fnei Tuma. That's what the Gemara Megillah talks about, is the Aron Kodesh, Adavra Mekabel Tuma. It's wood, but it's very, very big wood. So maybe it's very, very big, maybe it's not Mekabel Tuma. So you got to now learn all of Mishnayos and Kalim, all 30 prakim of Mishnayos Kalim, to figure out what is a davar mekabel tuma and what's not a davar mekabel tuma. There's a din in Hilchos Nidah that if a woman finds a kesem, she finds a stain, she didn't have a real flow, she finds a little small stain, If she finds it on a davar makabel tuma, it's a problem. If she finds it on a davar she'en makabel tuma, then a lot of details, but lemaisa it's not really a problem. So what's called the davar makabel tuma now? So the shach in the beginning of Siman Kuf Tzadi Ksamim, so he writes, if you want to know the details of this halacha, so I am Mishnayis Kalim. That's what he writes. So for a person who never opened up Mishnayis Kalim, you think the shach is saying, oh, okay, go take a look, 2-3 Mishnayis, and you'll figure out what's makabel tuma. It's 30 prakim of what's makabel tuma, what's not. The hardest Mishnayis in Shas, probably. Now, what is makabel tuma? Not makabel tuma. So in Hilchos Tumas Meksos, you have to know what is makabel tuma, what's not. So that depends on size, depends on materials, depends on a lot of factors. What shape, depends on many factors. What is makabel tuma, what's not makabel tuma. But that's the prerequisite. It has to be something that's in makabel tuma. What if I have something that's in makabel tuma, but it's something that really can't stand on its own? It's something that's going to flop down, it's going to fall down. So that's another possibility. There's a sugya in Baba Basra about that. That's something that can't stand on its own 2 feet. Maybe that's not considered to be a davar chaytzeit. It's gemar nelis. It's about to fall down. Even though right now it's somehow being propped up and being held in place by in a half-baked way, maybe that's also not considered to be a davar chaytzeit. So it's a combination of these two factors that sets up for us the most common application of what is a davar chaytzeit and what, according to some, is not, namely a door. Well, so we gave the example before, there would be a mace in the next room, and we're in this room, so assuming all the doors are closed. So all the doors closed, because the door constitutes something which is the davar chaytzeit, davar mafsik b'fri'atu, why not? So we have to ask ourselves a couple of questions. We have to ask ourselves, well, is the door makabel tuma? And can the door stand on its own? So this was a machlokes in the Taz and the Shach. So the Taz writes that he thinks that a door cannot serve as something to be mafsik b'fnei tuma, even though maybe just a piece of wood, maybe it's not makabel tuma. When we say that kli eitz is makabel tuma, it has to have what's called a base kibble. It has to have a receptacle tool. Say if you have a wooden bowl, that's makabel tuma. If you have a wooden knife is not makabel tuma. The Gemara learns this out from Sukkim. So just a slab of wood as a door, maybe it's not makabel tuma. But the Taz says, but the door can't stand up on its own 2 feet. If the door wasn't connected by the hinges, it would just flop right down. So the hinges are really, in a sense, like a davar hamamid. There what's holding the door in place. So the door itself is worthless. So the door is kemandalesa. The door is kemandalesa. So then the whole door doesn't exist. So you have a hole that spreads. So according to the Taz, a door is lamalvam, but the door is not going to help. So the Shach disagrees with the Taz. The Shach writes, no, it's not true. He says that the door is okay to be davar mafsik b'fnei tuma. Why? He says we don't look at the door as a separate entity and it's being propped up by the hinges. When the Gemara says that something has to stand on its own, that means if you have two different items. So I stick something, let's say I would stick a door here without hinges, and I would take a pot of something and try to put three pots to hold the door in place. So that's called something that can't stand on its own 2 feet. But here, the goal of the door, whenever you build the door, so you build it at the same time you build the hinges, and you connect it together, and it's one structure, it's one unit. So you don't view it as being, well, it's a door that can't stand. No, it's a door connected to hinges that can't stand, because the hinges are connected to the wall. So that's considered to be a davar that can't stand on its own 2 feet. Aye, but the door needs the hinges, and the hinges are metal, and the hinges are a davar makabel tuma. So if you're telling me the only thing that's saving the door is the existence of the hinges, but the hinges themselves should do us in because they're metal and makabel tuma. So the Shach says, no, that's not a davar makabel tuma because it was made l'shamish es hakarka. Whenever you have something that was made for the purpose of being part of a structure of the ground, that's not makabel tuma. Kalim are makabel tuma. Utensils, vessels are makabel tuma. Walls are not makabel tuma. Doors are not makabel tuma. Structures, buildings are not makabel tuma. They're not considered to be a kli. So even though the metal hinge was at one time was a kli, at one time it may have been physically a kli, but it was never halakhically a kli. It was nasa l'shamash esakark. It was made for the purpose. What else are you going to do with a hinge? So when they made the factory hinge, it was made al das to be connected to the ground, and the tacha is connected to the ground. So the hinge is not makabel tuma. The door is not makabel tuma. The door slash hinge can stand on its own 2 feet. So the door slash hinge is the davar mafsik b'fnei tuma. So that's how we're neig l'halacha. We usually assume like the shach against it, the chiddush, the chumra of the taz. We assume that our doors, notwithstanding the fact that they're being held in place by metal hinges, are davar she'ein makabel tuma, and as such, they have the ability to be mafsik b'fnei tuma. Therefore, we assume that if you have a mace in another room, so then the tuma would not spread through the door. There are other technicalities, we'll talk about a little bit later, what's called Sof Tumah Lotzeis. If the tumah itself is going to come out, so then, let's say you're planning on taking the mace out through this door into the next room, that's a whole different ballgame. But let's say, Naniach, I would be over here, there would be a mace in the next room. So as long as all the doors and all the windows, everything, all the connections are shut, let's say over here, everything's shut with doors that are connected to hinges. Over here, the windows, so to speak, are also closed with hinges. So the Taz would say, none of this is a Dabra Mafsik. And the Shach would say, all of it is a Dabra Mafsik. That's a weird Noeg La'alocha. That's why you can sometimes have a situation where where a Kohen finds himself in a building, and there's a mace in the building. So sometimes the initial reaction of the Kohen is to get out as fast as possible. That may not be the right reaction. It depends where the Kohen is. If the Kohen's in a room that's closed off, so his best strategy is to stay put. Let's say there's a mace, for argument's sake, in the lobby of a building, and the Kohen realizes he's upstairs on the first floor. So why should he run out? If he's going to run out of the building, so right now he's safe. Right now the tube is not spreading. The doors are closed. If he's going to run out, so he's going to run into the line. He's going to run right past the mace. That doesn't make any sense. The best strategy is to make sure all the doors and windows, everything is closed, and then everything is a Dever Mafsik. Unless there's central air. If there's central air, so then you have to figure out whether the holes in the central air are more than a punjo. I think we once looked into this. No, I don't know, we've got a good central. Where are our vents?
Up there.
Yeah. I don't know the size of Punjab, I'm not sure, can't tell. I don't know, it could be that they're not. It could be that it is maybe less even than a Punjab, I'm not sure.
I still don't understand theoretically why something that is Makabal Tuma can't be Masi. It becomes a Shaylu Tuma, but that doesn't have the concept.
Right. It's right. It's not that it spreads, not that it makes the pot tummy, not the pot makes me tummy. No. It's a rule in Huchas Chotzes B'nei Tumah. It's a halacha Moshe Messina that in order to qualify something to break B'nei Tumah, you yourself have to be a Dovah Shein Mekabel Tumah. It's a halacha Huchas Chatzit. It's not, you're right, it doesn't spread the Tumah. Let's say the pot would quote unquote be Mekabel Tumah, then the mace would be taken out. I'm allowed to touch the pot. That was spoke about last week. The pot is a Kli Mateches. It becomes like the mace, but there's no issa, we assume, for going to touch the pot. One of the other conditions that are necessary in terms of a davar to be a davar hamasik b'nei tumah is that it has to be stationary. Now, what exactly stationary means, what stationary is not, is hardly questionable. That's a very famous gemara about oil zoruk. The gemara is a sugyas in Gittin and Nazir about what if I have a mace and the mace is totally surrounded with something, or it's not the mace that's totally surrounded. What if I'm totally surrounded? There's no posech tefach, it's not mekabel tumah. The only problem is the item that's separating between me and the mace, either I'm in this oil or the mace in the oil, let's call it an oil zorak, that it's something that's moving around. So is an oil zorak considered to be an oil hamafsik, or is an oil zorak not considered to be an oil hamafsik? So it's a machlokes hatanoim. Baruch Hashem, the Chazal had a lot of creative imagination, and they drew a description of a person who's being put into a box, and then someone's picking him up and throwing him over the cemetery in a box. So people till 150 years ago, where this gemara thought it was just a creative idea, but now of course we know that becomes the source of the entire discussion about planes. That's what we do. We take a person, take 300 people, throw them into a big box, close the door, hope for the best, then pick them up and toss them 6,000 miles. So that's what a plane is. So now the question becomes, is a plane considered to be a davra mafsik? Can it be a davra chatzis of Vantuma? Or for that matter, can a car be a davra chatzis of Vantuma? Things that are maybe totally closed off, but they're closed off in such a way that they're moving, is that considered to be a davar hamasik or not? So the Gemara quotes in a few places, the Mishnayos that talk about a machlekes hatanoim, where the oil zorak is shmei oil, where they're moving, where they're literally thrown oil, serves as an oil. Here, it means to separate. Here, we want it to be an oil. Because if it's an oil, then it's called an oil hamasik, and that's good. Normally oil is bad, but here oil is good. So if you hold the oil, Zorak is Shmei oil, then it serves as a Dabra Mafsik. It separates, it's a barrier between the two and you. If you hold the oil, Zorak lo Shmei oil, then it's no good. So how do we paskin that locha? So the Pasha says we paskin the oil, Zorak is lav Shmei oil. It's not considered to be an oil. What exactly do the words mean? So Taisus points out that there are different gradations of what's considered to be an oil, Zorak. So Taisus writes, if you have something which is mamish in mid-air, it's literally thrown in the middle of the air, it's not connected, not touching anything on the ground, so that type of an oil zorak, Tosis claims, everybody agrees, is lav shmei oil. That was never the machlokes. If you take a box and you throw it, mamash, it's 10 feet off the ground, for sure that's an oil zorak, and that's lav shmei oil, that will not be chaytis going to any tana. So what's the machlokes at the noim about? So Tosis writes, if you look carefully, the machlokes at the noim is about when the oil is moving, but the oil is being held by somebody, and the person's walking on the ground. So the person's walking, carrying a box, and say there's a Kohen inside the box. So I'm carrying the Kohen, and now I go past the Mace Kavaris. I go past the Mace. So that's the Machlekes at the Noyim. Can the box, which is being not literally Zaruk in the sense of thrown in midair, but it's traveling, it's moving, can that kind of an OL be a Dabra Chaytzitzanah? And we paskin that even that's no good. The first Tana holds only the box in midair is no good. We paskin even the box that's not literally in midair, but it's being held up in the quote unquote in the air, even that's no good. So based on that, Tosfos, the Mishnah Melech has a big chiddush. Mishnah Melech writes that when do we say that an OL Zaruk is not an OL? That's if either the box is thrown in midair, that's for sure no good, or the box is being held by somebody, at least their feet are on the ground. But what if you have a box, you have other kind of a structure, that it's moving, but it's moving on the ground. It's not mamish in the air. And it's not even being held by somebody. The box itself is in the air. It's on wheels. It's being rolled. It's being pushed. But it's on the ground. So even though it's moving, but it's moving on the ground itself. So the Mishnah Melech claims, if that's the case, then everybody agreed that's good. It means the only OL Zoruk, Slav Shmei OL, that we find in Chazal, either when it's in midair, that's for sure no good, or when it's being held by somebody whose feet are on the ground. But if the box itself is on the ground, that's for sure okay. That wouldn't be a problem altogether. So that's a tremendous chiddush that Mishnah Melech. Many Echorim disagree with that Mishnah Melech. Tosfos doesn't say that. So Mishnah Melech is reading into the Sugya. But if that Mishnah Melech would be acceptable, that would of course have serious ramifications for cars. That's what a car is. A car is, it's a box on wheels, and unless you're driving very fast, so your tire is supposed to be on the floor. So when the box is on the floor, even though it's moving, it's the type of an Ol Zorik that may be good according to this Cheshvan of Tosfos. So it's a big chiddush, this Mishnah Melech. Many disagree with it, but there's another problem with the application to cars, is that cars may fail based on other considerations. Cars, you have to figure out what material cars are made of, because in order for something to be chaytzeitz, the ABCs are, is that it can't be a davar mekabel tuma. So maybe a car is mekabel tuma, because a car is made out of metal. So maybe the car is like the modern day equivalent of that pot sitting on the wall. So we have to work on that. So we need two pieces of information. We have to have some halachic information, what exactly the status of the metal of the car is. And then we need some car information, namely what kind of metal, what kind of material are we talking about. Is a car davar mekabel tuma? The whole discussion of the cars only begins if you accept the Mishnah Melech. If you reject the Mishnah Melech's distinction, if you hold that even a moving on the ground, even if it's touching the ground, on the tires, on the wheels, it's still called an Ol Zoruk, then I don't care what in the world the car is making. Make it out of anything, and it's still Eino Chotz Mifnei Tuma. So in order to be Matir, a Kohen, let's say, to be in a car and drive to a cemetery, drive under trees, any of these kinds of shilas, so you have to first Paschal like the Mishnah Melech, then you have to get your facts and halacha straight about the metal of the car. So hopefully next year we'll reach that point. So next week I'm not going to be here. I'll be here for Shabbos, but I won't be here next Sunday morning. And there's a good chance I won't be here the following Sunday morning is Chanukah. I have to check the schedule of where I have to give a special shiur somewhere. I don't know whether the minion time is going to work out. So let me figure that out. But next week, next time I won't be here. Possibly 2 weeks also. So we'll see.